We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Christopher, let's go.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. We took the show on the road. We are at the Edison Park Inn. You talk about old school Chicago Northwest Side action. That is what we are doing tonight. So if you're in the area, you should stop by. I'm here from 6 until 10. Lance Briggs is going to join me from 7 until 8:30. We've got a lot of great sports conversation for you tonight. And a ton of Bears talk, which we will get to momentarily with our buddy Anthony Heron. The phone number is 312-644-6767. You can text us at 670-11 if you wish. On site, my man Tony Gill is here producing the show. Back at the ranch, Christopher Dickens is in charge of the sound. And Herb Lawrence is the executive producer of this fine program. You can also go to Twitter, at Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can find me. I threw up there on a poll something that I wanted to talk with you about, and it's about where the Bears are in your mind, like level of expectation, how we should be judging them. Should we be judging them as if they're a playoff contender, or should we be judging them as a team that is in their rebuilding process? So the poll is up right now. Let me take a look at where things stand here, because I put the poll up about an hour ago. So far, there's 566 votes. 56% of the people say that the Bears should be judged as a playoff contender. Okay, that's fair. So thanks for hanging out. If you want to get involved, you can call in. If you don't want to call in, you want to just hang out and listen, that's good too. Back downtown is our buddy Anthony Heron. We love Anthony. Anthony does great work for whether it's Pac-12 or if he's covering the NFL on Fox 32. And now he's got a new gig. He's doing a radio show with Jason Goff every morning on Big Ten Sirius, which I believe is channel 327 or 372. Anyway, Anthony can tell you better. He joins me now. What's up, Anthony?
Lawrence, what's up, man? Appreciate you having me on. This is nice. You're out. You're about. I hope you're going to dine at some point while you're there. Maybe you get a little descriptive with the menu so I can get a sense for whether or not that's somewhere I want to go check out.
Well, it is, because they have the great pizza here. They got the brick oven pizza oven here, so you can get some pizza. It's great. I had the blackened chicken because I had pizza like a night ago. So I had the blackened chicken sandwich, and it was delicious. Where are you back from this weekend?
I just returned. I had the USC at Utah game over the weekend for the Pac-12 Network, and that was another really good one, man, because we're at the point in the college football season right now where once you kind of cross over into mid-October, there's enough tangible evidence. We're going into broadcast. There's plenty of film available to watch on all these teams, and you have a sense for who they are, who not just who the star players are, but who are those kind of emerging talents, because, you know, in the college game, when you're dealing with teenagers, tend to be some guys sometimes who maybe they're not there, they're not involved, they're not necessarily playing that well yet the first couple of weeks of the season. And then you see a light bulb moment with players sometimes where they really start to kind of come on and emerge for teams. And that's one of the fun things, to watch some of those talents start to sort of break through once you get mid to late October. But then most importantly, the games really mean a lot this time of year. And so from a college football standpoint, it's really fun to be involved in broadcast with a Power 5 conference like the Pac-12.
This hour on The Score is being brought to you by Sunrise Chevrolet in Glendale Heights, the bright way to buy. you had a lot of football that you were trying to digest over the weekend, and I know that part of that had to do with the Bears. In a nutshell, what did you think of the Bears-Patriots game?
Well, a lot of folks seem to have the reaction coming out of it that it was, and I'll just use sort of the blanket term of moral victory, because it was the Patriots who they played against. And, you know, I think this relates a bit to your poll question that we can dive deeper into throughout our discussion here. But, you know, the Bears, there should be the level of frustration that we saw from Matt Nagy and Mitchell Trubisky. You know, they weren't maybe quite as surly or upset as they were after the Miami game, but you could tell there was a level of frustration there from each guy because it was a missed opportunity, and it made – and I think maybe I even mentioned to you last Tuesday night where if you come out of the New England game and you're 3-3, then that's where the drop ball against Miami, you know, literally and figuratively against the Dolphins – ends up putting you behind the eight ball, because obviously the Patriots were going to be a tough out to get this win. So now the Bears went from 3-1 a couple of weeks back. You come off that bye week, and now suddenly they're 3-3. They're no longer in first place in the division. And this season that was very deeply ascending on one path is now leveling out, and people are getting banged up. And now it's got a very different vibe to it going into the Jets game. So the Pats game was a missed opportunity. But it's the Patriots, and when you're measuring where the Bears are right now by the standard of we just faced the Patriots, you know, and all the Super Bowls that they've won over the past couple of decades and the level of execution that they have there, especially in crunch time, that's where the Bears really fell short at their most, was in critical moments when plays had to get made. They weren't making those plays, and it's not because the Patriots physically overmatched them. It's because the Patriots just executed at a much higher level than Chicago did. And in a lot of ways, I suppose that makes sense because they are a young and emerging roster. But to measure yourself against the Patriots, it gives you that prime example of where they're not at yet from an execution standpoint.
What's funny to me about that game and the idea of a moral victory is it wasn't the Patriots' best game. They were sloppy early. They had injuries. Gronk wasn't out there. They ended up losing Sony Michel in the game. And you're thinking, here's an opportunity. Like, that's, I think, was probably the most frustrating thing for me. That you could take the moral victory if you want. But I thought that there was a chance there. Like, they could be had. This was one of the weeks where you could have done something against New England. And you didn't, because you had some breakdowns in all three phases of the game. So for me, it's almost like a reverse of the feeling of, oh, well, you hung with the Patriots. But you could have beaten the Patriots, and that was probably your best opportunity to beat the Patriots.
And, you know, you look at it, and especially by comparison to some of the other games, I mean, I suppose the Miami game is the one game that you would say the Bears just flatly got outplayed in that one. Overall, you know, the other two losses, you would say Chicago should have won that game. Chicago controlled enough of that game to feel like they could have and maybe should have come out with a victory. And for this Patriots game, you think about the comparison with a guy like Tom Brady and the level of control that he played with and the execution he had. And it's not like, you know, it's not like he wasn't harassed at all, but there was not consistent pressure. And so when the pressure wasn't there and the Bears weren't getting home, you saw a level of calm and precision from within the pocket that wasn't necessarily carving the Bears up down the field. That's not really who Brady is at this point in his career anyway. But the game plan for New England was fairly obvious from the jump. It was, let's make sure we're not getting time harassed. Let's get the ball out of his hands quickly. Let's throw the fast passes, get it outside with a lot of screens. Let's work the Bears laterally and get them moving like that tennis match where you're just ponging back and forth, side to side. And then if there's a vertical opportunity, let's hit it. And, you know, there was only, I believe, PFF had them at two passes that Brady threw over 20 yards in the air in the game. And aside from that, the other 34 pass attempts were all less than 20 yards as far as where it traveled from his hand. So you neutralize the pass rush in that manner. You get the defense having to pursue over and over again. And in the midst of that pursuit, there still needs to be precision within that. And that's where Brady was at his best. And it's a comparison to where the Bears' passing game still lacks.
I took some positives out of the way that Mitch Trubisky handled the fourth quarter. And what I mean by that is that it would have been easy to go, well, Tom Brady's out there doing Tom Brady things, so we're just going to take this L and be happy that we were in the game for three quarters or whatever it was. I like that they stayed aggressive. He made aggressive throws. And those are the moments where if you want to get excited about a quarterback and you're looking for the development angle of it, I felt that was an important developmental moment for Mitch, even in a loss. And you can couple that with the Miami game as well. Am I reading too much into it?
No, you're not. And I would say this. You know, there's a couple of different phases to pay attention to with what we saw in evaluating Trubisky in the game. Mechanically, I felt like his feet were as calm as they've been aside from the Tampa Bay game. And it's almost like you throw the Tampa Bay game out, you know, and just looking at it in a vacuum, maybe you throw out the best game, you throw out the worst game, and where are the games in the middle? And this New England game would certainly be one of the games in the middle. And I liked how set his feet were within the pocket. Did he still have some moments where he kind of threw off his back foot when he didn't need to? He certainly did, but not nearly as many as he had. And there was some pressure on him throughout the game. It wasn't like the Miami contest. It wasn't like some of the other games where there was a more intense pass rush, but he was willing to hang in the pocket. And part of the ways that he struggled early in the season, even when the pass rush hadn't broken down, but when he was uncertain, in the same manner that he was in the game Sunday against New England, he was very uncertain. The Patriots use a lot of blended coverages that make it difficult to read whether it's man or zone on the back end. And then when you see zone, where's the window going to present itself? In which quadrant of the zone do you have an opportunity to throw a pass? So that's confusing for a guy where Mitch is at in his development right now. But what he didn't do that he'd done the majority of games this season and really just throughout his young career so far was quickly drop his eyes to the rush and then start to figure out how do I either extend the play so I can find a window on the move or how do I just tuck it and run? And he did have a career high in rushing yards, but it wasn't all just generated from looking to run quickly. It was, all right, we get to a certain point where the pass rush is finally broken down. Then you saw Mitchell Trubisky start to evacuate the pocket. But I like the fact that he was willing to stand in there more on Sunday than where I felt like he had done in a lot of other games prior to this. So that, to me, was a sign of growth, a sign of him trying to take the coaching and the drills from Mark Helfrich and Matt Nagy and the Bears offensive staff. And you see him working at that in the game. But it was also, to me, and I know Matt Nagy refutes this a little bit, but it was one of his less accurate games that he's had. And, you know, he certainly had his share of inaccuracies this season. But as set as I felt like he tried to stay and as strong as he tried to stand in the pocket, I was surprised he wasn't more accurate, especially in the first half. But your point about the fourth quarter, that is definitely a sign of growth because, you know, the point I've made about him consistently is that he hadn't necessarily been tested in college in the manner that you want top flight quarterbacks to be tested when you draft them that high, because you need to be certain about the mettle of a guy who's going to be a quarterback in the National Football League. Because when you get to crunch time and when you're being tested by the best athletes in the world, you want a guy with the level of mental focus and with the fortitude to withstand what he's going to face against these NFL defenses. Mitch just hadn't been in that situation very much. So to do that, to stand up and try to lead a comeback against the Patriots and to do that in the fourth quarter and to play his best football in the last few drives of the game. And I even tweeted right before he threw an interception in the fourth quarter, he's throwing the ball a lot better than he had early in the game. And then a couple snaps later, he throws the pick and everybody's like, oh, this didn't age well. It doesn't change the fact that he's throwing the ball better at this point than he did earlier in the game. He just came up short on this one particular pass once they approached the red zone. But yes, at the end of the game, he did play his best football. And it's important for us to recognize that and for Mitch to recognize that he's capable of doing that.
This segment is being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. I'm talking with Anthony Heron, one of our experts at The Score. When we talk about football, you can check him out on Fox 32 after the game is over. You can hear him on Sirius XM Big Ten channel every day in the getting up early. And he is trying to get football coverage. Yeah, I mean, it is, you are working like a crazy person, and I respect your hustle. But I do want to talk to you about that. But I want to ask you about the one of the other big stories that came out of the Bears game first. And being that you're a former NFL defensive pass rusher, we can talk to you about this. Mm-hmm. You had Khalil Mack out in coverage quite a bit. Same thing for Leonard Floyd. It's clear that Vic Fangio wanted to play some coverage instead of blitzing Tom Brady. That being said, I felt like they took their most effective weapon, even if he's hobbling around on an ankle, and partially because he's hobbling around on one ankle, and put him in a worse position to be effective defensively.
I think that's a fair evaluation of it. I would assess what their game plan was as it relates to Khalil Mack in this manner, and you did touch on it a little bit there, because he's apparently not in a position to be that effective as a pass rusher. And you even see it in playing the run, where he was engaged with guys the other day, whether it was tight ends or tackles or whomever. And sometimes while he's trying to get off the block, you see that he can't even really keep his feet under him. He can't even, you know, plant with a sturdy base. He doesn't have stability in his lower body right now because his ankle appears to be bothering him that much. And, you know, they haven't really been that specific with exactly what it is that's wrong with it. I mean, I had something back in 2001 where my foot was actually broken. And I didn't even realize it. Initially, we just started with an x-ray, and then I limped through the entire season with it in 01. And it wasn't until the following offseason where we did a CT scan, and it was just this weird area. The calcaneus bone was broken in my right foot, and we just didn't discover it initially. So I limped through the whole 01 season, then got into through a couple of camps in the offseason in 02. And just as training camp was approaching, I'm still limping around. Then Detroit says, man, let's run some more tests on this. These x-rays aren't showing anything. And then the CT scan ended up showing, oh, your calcaneus bone is broken. You need surgery, and you're going to miss the whole season. So who knows exactly what it is? I hope his foot isn't broken. If it is broken, I hope it's something that can still heal and be limped through. But for Khalil Mack, you know, he's a nine-figure guy as far as what they've essentially committed to him at this point. So I understand why they want him on the field. I respect the fact that he wants to be on the field. I do believe that it makes sense if you feel like you're not making the injury worse, because I know some folks around town are like, hey, just sit him down. And even my guy Corey Wooten, during our postgame coverage the other day, he was saying maybe they should just sit him down for a week or a couple of weeks and get him healthy. There's a couple of problems with that. One, what's coming behind him? You know, are you going to put Kylie Fitz on the field? Are you going to trust Aaron Lynch to be your main edge rusher at that point? It's not like when you take him out of the lineup, you're bringing in someone else who the opposing pass protection has to game plan around, that you're really going to scare the opponent with that. So unless Leonard Floyd does emerge here, taking Khalil Mack out of the lineup is a huge loss to the Bears defense, obviously. And there's not really much you have right now to be able to replace him with that's shown you much. Aside from the fact that there's not a lot replacing him, you also have the aspect of Khalil Mack can still be a part of your game plan. Because when you do line him up on the edge, you still have an opportunity. It's similar to, you know, until a team recognizes that maybe the mobile quarterback can't move. Like, say, you know, when I was with the Falcons and Michael Vick, if he had kind of a bum ankle going on, you'd still see teams spying Michael Vick during that first half of the game just to see, like, how banged up is he? Is his ankle really that messed up, or is he going to take off and run? Then maybe as they get a sense for it throughout the game, they start to leave the spying alone, and they know, all right, he's got to sit in the pocket so we can play some coverage. There's still some of that that can and will happen with Khalil Mack with the Bears lining him up on the edge. The opponents respect him to such an extent that you're still going to be able to dictate. There's going to be multiple blockers who are going to be assigned to know where Khalil Mack is at all times and likely be assigned to him. So that's still something that Vic Fangio can take advantage of. So it's essentially you can still utilize him as a decoy to know that you can predicate some matchups for Akeem Hicks and for Leonard Floyd and for whomever else you think can take advantage of a one-on-one matchup. The issue is those guys need to make plays when it's there, though. Having Khalil Mack on the field can still pay dividends if the other guys will make plays because of it.
Anthony, hang on, because I want to talk specifically about what you were just saying about other guys, because that has been, over the last 48 hours, people have been going, where's Leonard Floyd? And I want to talk to you about where he should be in his development as a pass rusher and what's fair to expect. More with Anthony Heron, one of our Bears insiders, one of our experts. We're picking his brain for the next 40 minutes. Sit back and relax and enjoy this great football conversation with a guy who really understands what's going on with the game. We'll continue the conversation next here on The Score.
Mental errors, little things, you know, attention to details, things like that, you know, effort-wise. But, you know, that's some things that we can, you know, we can control. So we just got to get those negative things out and go back to playing football we was at the beginning of the year.
That's Bears safety Eddie Jackson, who's had a rough couple of games. Hasn't tackled particularly well. Before that, I thought Eddie Jackson was playing at a Pro Bowl level. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock. Lance Briggs is going to join me at 7. We are at the Edison Park Inn. It's the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. Lance will be on with me from 7 until 8:30. We talk with Anthony Heron once a week, which is great. He's joining me from downtown. We're talking about the Bears. We talked about Khalil Mack and what it should open up for other guys with him being out there. Seemingly, Anthony, it hasn't opened things up for Leonard Floyd. Why is he not taking that next step? And what's fair to expect from him at this point?
Well, with Leonard Floyd, here was my, and I'll backtrack for a moment, because my concern about him as a top 10 pick during the draft process, and I discussed this all over The Score and all over the city of Chicago. I was on multiple stations that draft weekend when it happened right here in Chicago, was that he wasn't really a pass rusher in college. So the Bears drafted him as a project to try and mold him into that Vic Fangio outside linebacker pass rush freak. But that's not what he ever really showed at Georgia. What he showed was great effort, great athleticism, you know, high upside, and he did make some plays. Not many of those plays were quarterback sacks as a pass rusher. So I think, you know, sometimes it gets assumed that because a guy is tall and fast and tenacious, that automatically means he can just step right in and start rushing the quarterback. Some guys can. A lot of guys cannot. It's not that simple and automatic. So we've seen year by year Leonard Floyd show flashes and show signs of the ability to be a very effective pass rusher, but that's been extremely inconsistent. I think at this point in his career, this stage in his development, it's more than fair to anticipate, especially, you know, with the hand getting healthier and healthier, and of course each season he has dealt with some version of injury that's kind of slowed him up for a bit, but it's more than fair in year three to think that Leonard Floyd should be making more of a consistent impact on the game. Now, saying all that, he's playing fine. He's playing well. And signing Khalil Mack does provide some cover for Leonard Floyd when Khalil Mack is the full version of himself. You know, the Leonard Floyd's pass rush being MIA through the first three games didn't matter because Khalil Mack was providing enough pass rush for the entire unit on his own. So it didn't matter. But at this point, when you have a hobbled Khalil Mack, and who knows, maybe at some point they do yank him out of the lineup and Khalil Mack has to sit down for a game or two, then you have to count on Leonard Floyd being your main edge rusher, just like they had to count on it for the last couple of seasons. And he's not showing the consistent ability to make that happen. Now, like I mentioned, I do think he had his most active, most effective game last week, or, you know, not this past Sunday, but the previous Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. And even with that, there was really only a few plays where you saw him really affecting the quarterback. So if Khalil Mack's out of the lineup and they say Leonard, as opposed to, you know, 13 to 15 pass rush opportunities a game, you're going to get like 30 pass rush opportunities a game. And just, who, you know, if Khalil Mack's not out there, it's going to be Kylie Fitz or it's going to be Aaron Lynch or whoever the other outside linebacker is. They're going to be our coverage guy, and you're going to get a whole lot of shots to get after the QB and really see with that consistent ability to do so if we get something out of you, because he is good in coverage, you know, for that position. You know, you can't just line him up on your best receiver throughout the game, and he got exposed in some moments playing a running back one-on-one in space, which is tough duty for any outside backer. But Leonard Floyd is pretty good in coverage. He's played well against the run this season, but a lot of folks want that position to have big sack numbers. He definitely has not had that because he has yet to get one this year.
Well, how much do we put into consideration his draft status and being, you know, a top 10 pick and expecting there is it fair to expect that is a guy that you're saying is going to be a big part of your pass rush for the next 6 years?
Well, it's kind of like if you have a, you know, a great closer who isn't coming through, and so you turn him into a middle reliever and then just sign some other great closer on a baseball team. You know, so I mean it can be covered up. That's essentially what paying Khalil Mack, guaranteeing him 90 mil or whatever it is, and making him a nine-digit guy with the whole worth of his contract, it covers up for the fact that you drafted Leonard Floyd in the top 10 to be what the finished product of Khalil Mack is. You know, when you draft a guy in the top 10, you know, you want that guy to immediately affect the game, and especially in year three, to not just be some complimentary piece of your defense. You want a top 10 pick to be someone you're building around at that position. And, you know, regardless of whether or not, you know, we may overrate how zero sacks and what that means for Leonard Floyd, we certainly would not be overstating the fact that as a top 10 pick, he's not a guy the Bears defense is built around at this point. Like I said, he's playing good football. He is not playing great football. He is not having a game-changing impact on the game, on the opponent, like you want top 10 picks to have. So his draft stock, his draft status, it does mean something, but over the last two seasons, Ryan Pace has assembled the roster in a manner around Trubisky and around Floyd, or around these project picks, around Kevin White, who, you know, he made his biggest play as a Bear the other day. It was coming up 1 yard short of the end zone, and that was the biggest splash play Kevin White has made. So these projects that have been drafted in the top 10 by Ryan Pace, you look at the last 2 years, and he's done enough in bringing in veteran presences around them to sort of cover that up and put a very good roster to get together. The Bears take the field as at least as talented, if not more talented, than every team they face through this point in the season. So that shouldn't go unnoticed. But as it relates to the top 10 picks, these are still projects who are unrealized at this point.
The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern football. Coach Fitz and the Cats host number 19 Wisconsin this Saturday at Ryan Field. Limited tickets remain. Buy now at nusports.com. You may know my voice. I'm Lawrence Holmes. I host the show. Here with you until 6 to 10. The other voice, the really good voice that you hear, is Anthony Heron. He's one of our experts here at The Score. You can check him out as well on Pac-12 Network. You can see him on Fox 32 after the game is done. And you can check him out with his new radio show. So break it down for me. What's the new show? Where can people hear you? What are you going to be talking about?
So every morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Central Time on SiriusXM, myself and our guy Jason Goff, we host a show called Big Ten This Morning. We're still trying to piece together what the hashtag should be. Should it be, you know, because the Big Ten hashtag is just B1G. So should it be like Big AM, like B1G AM, or should it be BTTM, Big Ten This Morning? Whatever it ends up being, we're on from 6 to 9 Central Time every morning. We're talking all the Big Ten action. Right now, of course, it's in the middle of the college football season, so we're talking plenty of Big Ten football. We started talking a bit of Big Ten hoops this morning as we get through the rest of this first week, because this is the first week we've been on the air. SiriusXM, Channel 372, myself and Jason, we're talking to various beat writers from all around the Big Ten Conference. We're talking to coaches. We spoke to Jeff Brohm today. We spoke to Tyler Trent yesterday. If anyone watched College Game Day, they have a sense for the story of this, you know, the preeminent Purdue fan in the country right now, young man named Tyler Trent, Tyler Trent, who was unfortunately struck three different times here. He's tried to defeat cancer, a rare form of bone cancer that befell him. He's beat it a couple of times, and at this point, you know, Tom Rinaldi did a great job telling the story on College Game Day that at this point it's terminal, but he still stayed close to the program, and Jeff Brohm, Purdue's head coach, brought him into the fold, and you know he's been one of the main cheerleaders for Purdue, and he's had a difficult time lately physically. And he was going to the Ohio State game the other night, and there was a point just the day before the game where he wasn't sure if he'd be able to be there in person, and he's throwing up and going through all these physical trials. He was able to get out there. He predicted the upset. Purdue pulled it off. So we talked to Tyler Trent yesterday. We talked to Jeff Brohm today. We've got a lot of great guests. We're going to have Fitz on later in the week, Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern. So we're talking to the Big Ten luminaries. It was a great week for us to actually launch the show because of everything that happened between Michigan and Michigan State and Harbaugh and D'Antonio going at it and what went down at Ross-Ade Stadium in West Lafayette with Purdue upsetting Ohio State. It's been a cool week for us to start this show up because there is no shortage of Big Ten news.
Well, I'm glad that you guys are working together. It's a really fun show. I heard your interview with my colleague at DePaul, Adam Rittenberg, and that was great stuff. So the coverage on the Purdue game, which had every football fan in the country kind of in touch with what was happening on the television, was just great. So hang on. I got one more thing, a couple more things that I want to ask you. We got one more segment with Anthony Heron. We are talking Bears football. We are getting his perspective. Lance Briggs is here with me. He'll join me at 7 o'clock. Boogie's got some things to say. I can see he's already writing down his talking points and everything that he wants to get across in our conversation. More football conversation next here on The Score. All right, so that just kind of made my day. Lance is up here showing me funny videos. He'll be with me starting 7 o'clock. My friend Sheena Quinn from the White Sox just came over here, and she brought her beautiful little baby. That is making my day. Oh, my God. He's so cute. So this now gives me an opportunity while I'm talking to Anthony for him to talk about the cool thing that his son Bishop has done this week. Has he done anything fun this week?
So he's at the point now where he's borderline walking. He's not officially walking yet. What he does is he'll put one hand like on the couch or on the table and just kind of cruise along near it, and then he'll let go. And once he lets go, he'll just look at us, and he's standing there without his hands on anything. He's standing there looking up at me and my wife, and we'll freeze and we'll stare at him, just waiting to see if he's going to take some steps. And he'll just hysterically laugh and plop down on the ground. He's just messing with us at this point. You can tell we're waiting on the initial steps to happen. And so he's getting a kick out of just watching us squirm.
Okay, well, that's good. That's what I would expect from young Bishop as he makes his way to. Have you figured out, is he going to play football or is he going to play golf?
Preferably, he's going to play both. In my opinion, well, I shouldn't even say preferably he'll play both. He's going to compete in sports. If he wants to play football, I'm all for it. At this point, my wife is not all for it because she has pushed me around in a number of wheelchairs after a number of lower body surgeries and back surgery, shoulder surgery. You know, she's seen me through the ringer in the football world to the extent that she doesn't have any interest in our son stepping onto a competitive football field with pads on. But I figure this is not a battle worth having right now. We'll see if he's interested in playing. Then at that point, it's a discussion my wife and I can pursue a little more deeply at that point. And then hopefully, you know, we can be viewed as she's going to be out number 2-1. But right now, it's a pick your battles kind of thing. You've been married long enough to know that. There's no point in arguing about it right now until I know if Bishop even wants to play.
She was an athlete too, though, right?
She was, yep, All-American field hockey player, and she could have went and gotten a scholarship in a number of different sports, in hoops and softball and golf. She just chose field hockey because Iowa's program offered her, and they're a top 10 field hockey and a top 10 journalism program. But, yeah, she's a better athlete than me.
Okay, all right, well, okay. Like I said, I'm sure that Bishop will be a Justice League member. With jeans like that, he should be good to go. So let's look forward here on what things the Bears can do better. I one of the biggest takeaways, and we haven't even talked about special teams. I'll get to them in a second. But one of the biggest things I took away from the game was you had, of the called runs, there were 19 called runs that got 53 yards. I'm taking out all of the Mitch scrambles because that's him freelancing, and he did it very well. It was actually a really kind of impressive performance to watch him use his legs to help put them in a position to win.
Yeah, because it wasn't frantic. Just to put a button on that point, and I agree with you, and we've seen him run before, but he did seem calm as he did it. You know, he wasn't just kind of frantically scrambling around like his head was cut off. He was like, you know what, I'm not sure what I'm looking at from a coverage standpoint, so I'm just going to tuck it. I'm going to move around a little bit, and I'm going to gain some major yards. And he got out of bounds. He slid. There was a control to his game the other day that I was fairly impressed by. It's just unfortunate that for the majority of the game, he wasn't real accurate as a passer. But even his run game and him taking off scrambling a bit felt like it had a level of control to it to me. So I definitely agree with the points you made there.
So what's wrong with their called run game?
I believe that Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich are two of the more creative offensive minds in the National Football League that are coupled together right now. I've covered Helfrich for a long time. I called a number of his games over the years in my coverage with the Pac-12 Network while he was the head coach at Oregon. He's got a great mind, and I talked to you about this even before he had stepped on the field when he first got hired. He's got a great mind for formation, for personnel groupings, and how you can attack defenses and using those personnel groupings. My issue with the Bears' run game as it sits right now is that I believe you've got these two really creative offensive minds, and it seems like the majority of the snaps, Nagy is trying to outsmart the defense almost every time they're out there. And it seems he feels like it's his job to ensure that he's got his team in a better offensive play than the defensive scheme will allow for them to be stopped. And I just feel like it's their need to more consistently just keep it simple and utilize the creative stuff, the clever stuff, the quote-unquote cute stuff. Utilize that as more of a supplement, especially once you get down in the red zone. Because to me, when you're getting the short yardage and you've got an offensive line that for multiple years now has showcased themselves as physical run blockers who can open holes for a back like Jordan Howard, who does a really nice job running vertically, leaning on tacklers, getting yards after contact, yards after collision, not just, you know, somebody falling off of his thigh, but when they hit him square, he's falling forward. So to me, when you're seeing a third and one where somebody stops an option, every time I see that, I'm thinking, why wasn't the first thought to just give it to Jordan Howard on a dive? And then you get to fourth and one, it's like, well, unfortunately, they stopped our creative third and one. So, all right, on fourth and one, let's do what we should have did on the previous snap. To me, they've turned Jordan Howard into, and I tweeted this during the game the other day, they've turned Jordan Howard in short yardage, in the red zone, inside the 10. He's become a supplement to this offense when really he should be the focal point in those areas of the field. He should be the focal point on short yardage, and then use the creativity, use the cleverness, use how smart Nagy and Helfrich are. Use that as the supplement, because it'll still work great as a supplement if they utilize Jordan Howard's skill that he has proven at the NFL level and that this offensive line has proven at the NFL level. Essentially, this same group has been together for the last 2 years when they've been healthy, and they've done well blocking short yardage, blocking the inside zone, blocking dive plays, blocking the power. So why not allow that to be the simplistic manner that you move the chains with, and you still have plenty of snaps available to get creative and clever? And I feel like the creative and clever aspect of the game is too much of the lead aspect of their run attack right now.
How can Jordan Howard express that feeling to the coaching staff without coming off like a jerk?
He can't. He really can't. And I don't even know that it's that's necessarily a bad thing that he can't, because and Matt Nagy, to his credit, has admitted publicly that he's got some growing to do as a head coach and as an in-game play caller. And I do feel like he's self-aware enough where I certainly haven't given up on the thought that he will recognize this as he moves forward. That's at least my hope. Now, the deeper we get into the season or deeper into his time as the Bears head coach, if we continue to see these same things, then I'll have more concern about it, or I'll be, you know, have more angst over it, that sort of thing. But as it sits right now, we're watching not only a young quarterback learn on the fly, a lot of young, inexperienced offensive players kind of learn this system and learn playmaking together on the fly. We're also watching an offensive staff that hasn't worked together and a head coach who hasn't called plays in critical moments, who hasn't managed games as the head man in critical moments before. And he's improving, or he at least will need to continue improving as we go here. And I do believe Matt Nagy has shown himself to be self-aware enough where I think we can expect that'll happen. Just like I talk about the talent and the work ethic and the coachability of Mitchell Trubisky, and that being enough to at least anticipate, we should see continued improvement. I feel like the demeanor and the mentality of Matt Nagy, coupled with his obvious acumen as an offensively creative mind, I think those things will show themselves, that there's a level of humility he's willing to carry himself with that I think will allow him to recognize that he can play to the strengths of his players more and trust his players with just a simple, with a basic play call to come up with making a play as opposed to feeling like it needs to be on his shoulders as the play caller to outsmart the opponent every time.
How bad was Bears special teams on Sunday?
Oh, good grief. It was that's one thing. If there's anything we've been spoiled with in Chicago, as odd as it seems, it does feel like for the most part special teams has been somewhat of a spoiling factor to us, whether it's in the return game on punts and kicks and, you know, in the coverage games. That was as catastrophic in giving up two touchdowns as it can be, especially against an opponent like that and against a return man like that in a game where you actually had, you know, at halftime, you had two takeaways and they had none. And, you know, you have a dynamic return man in Tariq Cohen, and obviously they have one in Cordero Patterson. And to immediately, once you get up, I believe they had gotten up 10 points, and then they give up like a 95-yard kick return touchdown where the Patriots answer right back, and it gets them right back in the game. And their best defensive player, Hightower, comes up with the block punt, and that leads to a touchdown. You know, there's something to be said for a guy like Hightower on the Patriots to not only be their best defender, but to be a starter on their punt rush and to come up with that play that got made that gave New England, you know, that point in the game, the big play that the Patriots needed at that moment on special teams. He was the one that made it. There's a lot of credit that should go to him for being willing and able to do that on that special teams unit.
Who's the scariest returner you ever lined up against?
Maybe Allen Robinson. You know, when I've covered kicks for other teams, he was actually a teammate at a certain point in Atlanta as well. But Allen Robinson was a really dangerous one at one point in his career. You know, he wasn't quite to the Desmond Howard level, but at the point where we saw more frequent kick returns in the National Football League, and there were a number of different return men who did it at a pretty high level. Like back when you could make a roster basically just as a return man, you know, you don't really see that as much anymore. You need to have other roles that you can fulfill on the roster these days. But Allen Robinson was pretty much just a kick and punt returner. He did it at a really high level. I'd say he's probably the one that stands out to me where I've covered kicks against him, and he was really good at it. Dez was kind of towards the end of his career when I got into the league in the early 2000s, and Desmond Howard was starting to get banged up. So I played against him at various points when he was on a team, but I don't think he was ever actually returning the ball in a game where I was playing against him and had to try to tackle him in a kick coverage scenario.
So what should we look forward to? What are you hoping the Bears do better against the Jets than they did against New England and Miami?
I'll say this. I think the Jets are in an interesting little scenario here because they've got a rookie quarterback in Sam Darnold who's shown a lot of flashes. He's a guy, as you know, I was really high on him coming through the draft process, and they started him day one. And I think the inclination for a lot of folks looking at the game against the Jets could be that you've got a rookie QB who has shown that he's able to be forced into some turnovers, and he's willing to throw the ball into traffic. So maybe because the pass rush has lacked for a couple of weeks now, maybe the Bears should just bring the house and blitz the mess out of Sam Darnold and see what happens. I don't really think that's necessarily the play this week. I think that the Bears should certainly situationally blitz, and that's a good thing. And I'd like to see if Roquan Smith, in becoming a more consistent part of the blitz package, if that's something where he makes some splash plays, because his tackle numbers have been fine for the most part. But I think there's some splash play capability from Roquan Smith that hasn't quite, you know, hasn't been realized yet. And I think maybe getting him downhill, allowing him to penetrate in the backfield, I think that's a way to perhaps get that element out of him. But that being said, blitzing Sam Darnold snap after snap, I don't know that that's the way to go this week, because Sam Darnold himself, he's one of these guys that has a real knack for the improv play. Like Mitch Trubisky is a guy who he's athletic, so he's capable of improv because of his athleticism, but he's not necessarily like, he's not an innate playmaker. Whereas Sam Darnold is like a point guard. He's just got this knack for when he's on the run and on the move, and he can change his arm slot. He can just in an instant, like it's like before he even sees it, he feels it, and the ball's coming out of his hand at an angle with a trajectory or with this off-platform sort of throw with the velocity that's necessary. He can get it right up over one level of defenders and then drop it right into the next level of defenders. He's just got an ability to do that without even having to think about it. He's just this reactional savant. And for him to consistently blitz him and to force him to be on the move, in a way, that almost puts him more into his comfort zone because it doesn't force him to think. It forces him to react. So I think situationally, the blitz package is something that should be used against Darnold. I think you do it too much and you free up the Jets' receivers and put them in more one-on-one situations. You know, and zone blitzes are obviously an option as well, but you do free up space where Sam Darnold, with a consistent blitz package, has the potential to take advantage of that, as opposed to count on your front four to make some plays and drop into coverage, confuse this young quarterback who is capable of being confused, and see if you can lead him into some takeaways, get some more interceptions on the board from a young guy who's really willing to throw it into traffic.
Anthony, as always, I appreciate your time and your dedication to this segment as you add on another job that you have to deal with every day. Thanks so much for joining me. We'll do it again next Tuesday, my man.
All right, looking forward to it, Lawrence. I appreciate you having me on, brother.
That's Anthony Heron, one of our experts here at The Score. You can watch him on Fox 32. You can hear him now on Big Ten every morning with our buddy Jason Goff from 6 to 9. If you're into Big Ten buckets or Big Ten football, those guys are going to be breaking it down every morning on the Big Ten Network, Sirius XM Channel 372. It's time. 55 is getting loosened up. I can see it right now. Lance Briggs is here in the building. We are going to talk some Bears football with him. He has got a notebook full of notes. And the Miller Lite Top Draft Show starts immediately after a timeout here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.